You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning. If you are just after joining us, it's very good to have you on board one way or another. We had an interesting conversation in the first hour of the show discussing restricted access once again to Ungreenan of Alia, and also to reaction from the farming community in relation to these new nitrate reductions, which is going to have an impact on a lot of farmers around the place. How many farmers are affected with the nitrates are under 80 cow herds? I suspect that the vast majority are large farms that will be affected, but they could potentially be affected in different ways, in that they could have borrowings, which it's more difficult for them to absorb, or they may sell their land, who's to say. If farmers put up with this, what happens? It's their own fault, but they can always remember the Agriculture Minister put a good argument forward to the EU, but as usual, it fell on deaf ears. Farmers need someone with a voice, someone with some courage, all of which Charlie is lacking. Get him out for good at the next election. Minister Charlie McConnell, when he did speak to this show, was very clear to say that he is out there fighting hard for farmers and getting the best possible deals, but we are part of a union. And within that, there are challenges and gives and takes. I'm sure that's the argument that he may make. Greg, many national monuments around the country will have a set time for opening and closing. Of course they will, but I can guarantee you, if you go to, and I keep mentioning Kerry because of, the way what it gets, I guarantee you there's no national monument of the scale of Ungreenan of Alia that's closed when it's closed. The councillors only talk about this when someone brings it up. Why have they not solved this years ago? There's no point in bolting the door when the horse is gone. Again, in fairness to the councillors, they have been trying to get a meeting with the OPW for a very long time. Greg, give the job of closing the barrier to a local in Burt. Times then can be changed. Thank goodness for wonderful naturalised locals like Bettina, who care so much for our amazing historical sites and spread the word internationally to tourists to visit our wonderful part of the world. The economy is in great shape for the elites like our government and all who are involved in politics, says the listener, but the rest of us don't matter. We still have to scrape the crumbs to survive week to week, very badly at that. Also, this government is a joke. Oh my God, between myself and my partner, we cover every type of sleeper except people who sleep all night and wake up refreshed. Okay. Greg, to those who are promoting culling innocent farm animals as a means of preventing or reducing climate change, their day is coming. I get you, but I would never be in favour of culling or whatever, but these animals are in existence, or at least in existence in the numbers, purely for the purpose of farming, if you know what I mean. So they've been created for farming. And you're very welcome back. A listener says, Greg, I know this was addressed before and I always appreciate you for making sure our voices are heard. However, the traffic lights on the Lifford to Ballybuffet Road are still an ongoing issue, which is disappointing for so many of us. The council insists they will work on this, but this has been an issue for months. The lights are forever out of order, causing massive traffic delays. I'm a care worker and constantly stressed about being late or letting my patients down. Well, we shall make a further inquiry in relation to that. Okay, continued reaction to this news that emerged for farmers over the last wee while. And we know now that there is a meeting taking place amongst farmers' representatives off the back of the announcement this week that new EU nitrogen limits will see cuts to dairy herds, and also there'll be a rush for more land if you want to maintain your same herd numbers. It's going to impact herd numbers unless farmers buy or rent more land in order to continue operating at their current capacity. Helen O'Sullivan is spokesperson for the Farmers Alliance. Sorry for the convoluted intro, Helen, but be that as it may. What is your reaction to this news?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I think this is going to have a very negative effect on our rural communities, on our local economy, and it's going to reduce the farmers' income by a huge amount. And bearing in mind, these farmers have invested thousands, in slurry storage, in low emission slurry spreading. They've had an awful lot of money's being put back into the land to ensure that we don't have, problems with the water quality. And I mean, if this is going to take place, if they're going to reduce the nitrates from 250 kgs to 220 per hectare, it will just be really detrimental to the dairy community and to the local economy.
But do you believe this can be resisted now at this point?
I hope it can be. If not, it's going to put an awful lot of pressure on other farmers, you know, like suckler farmers, tillage farmers, sheep farmers, because there's no way they'll be able to compete for land. At the moment, land is making an awful lot of money per acre anyway. But if the dairy farmers will be put under this enormous pressure now to either reduce their stocking level or else try and get more land to take on these new measures, land is going to go crazy. The price of land is going to go absolutely crazy. So it's going to have a huge effect on everything, you know, every farmer going forward, really.
It's a tight timeline that farmers, if they accept this, are having to work with.
Sorry, what's that, Greg?
It's a tight timeline because these measures are very, going to be...
It is indeed. Yeah, absolutely. It's a very tight timeline. And like I said, you know, I suppose we all know since, 2015, an awful lot of farmers have, you know, changed over to dairy farming. They've invested huge amounts of money and they've built up herds. So they have a lot of repayments to make back. And where is this going to come from? You know, if they have to reduce their numbers of cows, it's going to have a huge effect on their income.
What size
it's going
of
to make
a
it very hard for them.
What size, do you think this will affect all dairy farmers, or are there particular groups within it that will be more impacted by this type of a move?
I think it will have an effect on all dairy farmers. I suppose more so the bigger dairy farmers, with the larger number of cows, it will have a huge effect on those. And again, they will have an awful lot of more money invested in their enterprise, so it will have a huge effect. Already, costs, input costs are huge. And the price of milk has actually dropped back already. So outside of this, their income has been affected already because of the milk drop. And so it's going to put huge pressure on dairy farmers. It's going to put huge pressure on our local economies, on the rural economy, the rural community. It's really going to have a very negative effect. And I feel that they weren't really given enough time for the process to work with the water quality. We're being blamed a lot, you know, as you know, us farmers are getting an awful bad name, you know, because of climate change and water quality. And I'm not sure if all the correct information is put out there. I suppose just to give you an idea there, you know, okay, we're not saying that we're not, you know, polluting waters, but we're doing the best we can to rectify it. But there's also, on a daily basis, there's 7.5 million litres of raw sewage entering our water courses. And there's not a mention about this, you know. And there's nitrogen in this as well. So we don't know how much nitrogen is actually coming from agriculture, or is it coming from the raw sewage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's fines levied against us at a European level for that, but we can still carry on as we were. What about if the argument would be made to you, if Minister McConlogh was on, he might say that we are one of only three countries in the EU with a derogation, that we should be happy about that, and that the real task now is to maintain it at 220. You know, that that's we can't win the fight at 250, but we'll try and hold on to what we have, and we're battling hard in the EU to make sure that happens.
Well, I think, you know, I suppose because of our grass-based system, we're quite unique, and I suppose a lot of the other countries, they might have to keep their cattle in longer. So I think the fact that, you know, we are the most sustainable producers in the world, and, you know, we should be allowed to kind of continue to do what we're doing, and that is farm sustainability wise, you know. But I think if we were given a chance, and just to give you an example, down here in West Cork, in Timoleague, they have a monitoring water program going on. It's called Tagus Agriculture Catchments Program, and it has been proven down here in Cork, and this is the biggest area in Ireland with the highest number of dairy cattle. And down here, the water quality has improved hugely since 2010. You know, they're monitoring the water, I think it's every 2 minutes, and you see the nitrogen levels in the catchment area, and it has dropped to its lowest since 2010, despite the increase in stock numbers. So what I'm saying is, I think Charlie McConnell-Glogue should have given us more time, you know, to put these measures into place and to prove
the efforts that are being made.
And
to reward best practice, because and you see this in businesses of all sizes, when you reward those that aren't doing it correctly, you disincentivize those that are trying their hardest. And you're saying the efforts and the progress that is being made is not actually being recognized or given time to fully work through.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. And I think, you know, like, we are custodians of the land, and we are very, you know, very careful of what we do. We have been, you know, we've had various programs like the REPS, the Rural Environmental Protection Scheme. We've acres, we've organics. You know, we, the farmers, do want to help, and we'll do everything we can. And like we have mentioned already, we have invested huge amounts of money, I suppose, especially the dairy sector. And, you know, they really want to help. And they are. They've shown that by what they have done with their farms, by building huge slurry storage tanks, you know, by stop spreading, by, you know, the deadlines, which is now in September. You know, so we're doing what we're supposed to do, but we just need more time for it to be shown that it can work. Like, I think down here in West Cork, that is a great example of how the water quality has improved. And again, like I've said, Cork County has the biggest amount of dairy numbers in the county. So if we can do it down here, it can be done in all parts of the country. And I suppose, just to give you just another example there, that's not all the farmers' fault. I suppose on August the 7th, the 9 o'clock news in RTÉ reported that there was a list of beaches not suitable for swimming. And the reason for this was because all the sewage systems were bypassed during a flood, and it's just put straight out into our rivers and our bays. So imagine that, Greg, like, and not a word about it.
Mm. Yep.
Like, if that was a farmer, if their slurry tank was leaking, we'd be closed down straight away.
Okay.
You know, and there's not a word about it. And I think that's very wrong. There's nitrogen in our water, but it's not all coming from agriculture. There's an awful lot of the raw sewage going into our water courses every day, and that needs to be addressed.
All right, thanks very much for your time, Helen. Helen O'Sullivan, spokesperson there for the Farmers Alliance. Aquila says, regarding the farmers' plight, remember, they're telling you all along that they're going to do what they're going to do. You will own nothing and be happy. You'll eat crickets, lab-grown meat and be happy. People need to realise this and say enough is enough before it's too late. Sadly, most don't care. Right, okay, let us see, what should we move on to? More comments here. Good morning, Greg. I know that every little bit of a reduction in electricity bills is good, but there is no reduction in the standing charges, which went up by 100%. In addition to that, a 10% reduction in the units cost is just a joke after the huge increases they made last year. Electric Ireland and other energy suppliers are still gouging us. And also, sometimes it feels like we're being gaslighted. Did you hear in the news this morning a spokesperson for wind energy saying, we've had the best year ever. August was the windiest ever. We're producing so much power by way of wind energy. 31% of Ireland's energy is being created through wind, and it's only going to get better. Yeah, but I can't afford to pay my electricity bill. Who cares? You know, when are we going to start seeing some benefits of that? If we are generating 31% of electricity free after the installation of these wind turbines, and we're doing it within Ireland, well, then why are we not seeing the benefits of it? It does feel, and that gaslighting word's overused, but it does feel like they're taking a hand, don't they? Right, going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be talking about the situation in getting supports and services for our young people in various different areas. Stay right where you are. Okay, so for the next wee while, we're going to concentrate on our young people getting access to services for them, the impact it has on them, and of course, families. You'll remember last week, three Donegal CAMHS teams, we learned, had the lowest staffing levels, with one team without a psychologist, social worker or occupational therapist. The Mental Health Commission published its latest review into child and adolescent mental health services, as I say, last week. It examined 9 community healthcare settings across the HSE and found 4,451 children and teens are awaiting access to services. Katie joins us on the programme now, who unfortunately has sort of first-hand experience of what all this means. Katie, as much as you're comfortable in talking about the situation that you're going through at the moment, please do.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay.
So, Greg, I suppose it's kind of been a battle over this last year. It all started off with my child receiving a diagnosis for developmental coordination disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always seen through my child that, you know, there just wasn't something, you know. My girl was a difficult baby growing up, you know, very crying all the time, unsettled. It was a very difficult period. And as my child started to grow up more, I could see, yes, at the, you know, the terrible twos, that there's challenging behaviour and there's a lack of concentration and cooperation. But as my child progressed on, I could see that there was issues arising within school. I had always in the back of my mind, I wonder, has my child got ADHD? So my child was assessed by NEPS, and NEPS had also felt that there was querying whether my child had ADHD. So last year I put in a referral, the GP put in a referral into CAMHS, and unfortunately that referral came back four times that it was either incomplete or wasn't on the correct paperwork. And then on the fifth time then my child was accepted into CAMHS. I want to start off firstly by saying that CAMHS is an organisation, and I understand, you know, that they're all over the place at the moment, but like I've had first-hand experience of working, you know, with the people in the office, and like I, you know, at the end of the day, they're human beings, and what they are going through on a daily basis, you know, there's one lady in particular in CAMHS who was like my lifeline, and I'll be eternally grateful to that person, you know, for her support. So we got accepted into CAMHS, and I was told first of all it would be a few months waiting list. Then I was informed that they were losing their consultant, and at this stage my child's mental health was starting to deteriorate. And as each day went on, I kind of got a bit more concerned. And then a number of weeks ago, unfortunately, my child had expressed, you know, that they wanted. They thought about taking their own life. And so I rung the GP. The GP had made another referral to CAMHS, and last week myself and my daughter were brought up to CAMHS. And of course, going in, you know, I had the anger, how dare you just leave a child, you know, a year without support and leave a family without support. But Greg, when I went in there, I could see that the staff that they have, the staff is under severe pressure. You know, I can't blame, you know, the OT or the mental health nurse or anybody that's working in CAMHS. It's either the HSE or the government to blame. Because as the report showed last week, 4,500 children awaiting mental health support for various different aspects. And when you get there, the staff are, like, they're working, you know, to the bone.
Was that your daughter's initial assessment?
So, no, well, my daughter has a few other hidden disabilities.
Okay.
But this assessment with CAMHS last week, they brought my daughter into a room and observed her, and then another person took me into another room. And, you know, it was all the history, you know, my pregnancy, the birth, and then the aftermath, you know, like postnatal and then developmental milestones. Mm. Now, I do know that after that process, then they have to go to the school to do a school observation. But I suppose the problem they're facing is at the moment they don't have a consultant. And, you know, they're trying their best. Like, believe you me, I'm as frustrated as the next person. And probably before I went up to CAMHS last week, this conversation with yourself would have been very different.
Yeah,
I would have been very angry. And I am angry at whoever is in charge of CAMHS, because they're leaving children and families with no support. But when I seen the staff themselves, like I walked in and my eyes opened and I thought, you are trying your best. You know, and the person that was dealing with me, she was giving me leaflets and trying to, you know, go speak to this person, yeah. Go on to ADHD Ireland. You know, but for me, I don't know, it's the HSE or is it the government? Who's to blame? But somebody has to be held responsible for this.
Yeah, well, they say, CAMHS say, they acknowledge where there continue to be gaps and weaknesses in the current service, with work ongoing to expedite the recruitment of key frontline staff. And that's something we're going to be talking about now in terms of the process with which has been that they're going through. But, you know, we've had contact from staff within Katie last week in various areas. They're at the wit's end themselves, and they don't know how long they can stick it out because they're so frustrated. But this comes down to your daughter, and you want her to progress as best as she can, but with every waiting moment, I presume, and you've already mentioned it yourself, things get worse.
Yeah.
And then you have to try and live with that, and you must feel so helpless in not being able to do enough to help your daughter. Yeah. And then we have agencies like CAMHS and the HSE who you feel are letting you down.
And you see, I'm very much under the mind frame that when my daughter is supported, it's going to have a ripple effect, that whenever my daughter is given the right environment to be able to reach her potential, then it's going to have a positive impact on the home, and then they're going to be able to put the supports in place for us to, you know, be able to help her, you know, function in society and, you know, to be able to move forward with her life and to enjoy her childhood. But I would agree that the staff are severely under pressure, mm-hmm. severely under pressure. And it's whoever's sitting at the top, Greg, is they should be held accountable for it. You know, now, and obviously CAMHS isn't my only battle that I have to deal with, unfortunately. So the assessment of needs,
you're also dealing then with the Children's Disability Network teams?
No, I'm actually dealing with the assessment of needs. So you make an application to them. They basically organise. So that's where my daughter's dyspraxia or developmental coordination disorder was assessed. So everything was great. They got the assessment. And then next thing, everything went quiet within the AON, or the assessment of needs. Mm-hmm. And I rung every 2 or 3 days for about 2 months with getting no phone calls back. Mm-hmm. Nobody contacted me by emails. Mm-hmm. So then I went on to the HSC and I filled out your service, your say. And within 3 days, somebody had rung me from the HSC and I explained that we're meant to be on the AON process. I've heard nothing from nobody. Nobody's contacted me back. So this lady rung me back a few days later and told me that the manager of the AOM would be ringing me. Within a few hours later, the manager of the AOM rung me to notify me that the position is currently vacant and that it could be at least 2 months before that position is filled. So the AOM is there to support the parents, to support the child, to get assessments. There's nobody in that job at the moment. Then you have to fight to get your child into CAMHS to get the supports they need. And as a parent, Greg, it's like you're constantly hitting a brick wall. And it does, emotionally and mentally, it does take a toll.
And there can often be other children as well. And there's the whole family's impacted. Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll inquire again, but they're going to say that they don't have the staff, they can't fill the positions, they're trying their best, they're expediting it and all expediting it and all that stuff, Katie. But listen, stay listening. Thanks very much for your time, and I hope things improve for you very, very shortly. So last week, we were also talking to parents with children under the Disability Network teams across Donegal. They've received letters, many of them, explaining they may lose out on services due to recruitment and vacancy issues. The letter outlined that children with the most complex needs in terms of speech therapy, occupational therapy and psychology services will be prioritised. We spoke to Michelle. Her daughter has Down syndrome and says early intervention is key. And without this, her daughter and many other children will miss out on the ability to walk and talk. And speaking on this show, she said she'd resorted to taking webinars online in a bid to be able to help her daughter herself.
We have never, ever seen a speech therapist, which supposedly you're meant to see from around 8 months for the help of eating and, you know, movement of the mouth and all. We've never seen an OT. We did have physio up to about a month ago, and that's all gone. So as a parent, now I have to actually train myself in speech therapy.
Katrina was also on the show. Her son has autism. She says that skilled people in Donegal are leaving because of the cost of living crisis.
I have a friend that has two skilled children that have just qualified in occupational therapy and speech and language. They have qualified. But what's keeping them here? The cost of living is too high. They can't buy a house. You get the skills, but then, boom, there's another thing blocking.
That kind of feeds into our conversation. Our next guest, Leonard Watson, joins us now. Leonard, and listening to Katrina, listening to Michelle, listening to Katie. Now, there's a crossover sometimes, isn't there, between, you know, people who maybe have to access CAMHS services and the Children's Disability Network team. For those outside of it or don't have experience of it, it can be quite complex, Leonard.
Yeah, do you know what, Greg? Sorry.
Thanks very much for calling up.
Not at all. You're listening to parents, and that's hundreds of stories. Hundreds of parents could ring in here and tell the same story. you know, I was chatting to parents there in June at the CDNT meeting with parents, and, you know, there was newly diagnosed children for autism there, and I was saying, you probably think now this is the start of things to happen. And I just told them, I said, this is the start of your fight. You're going to be fighting now for the rest of your days to get service for your child. And I says, and you know what? And these parents are tired, you know, they're emotional, and it's just, you hear it in their voices. They're like, you know, you're just fighting all the time. Like, things for CAM, mental health, Greg. You can't wait a year for a child to see CAMs. Like, you know, that's an emergency with that child. Like, you know, we've experienced in our own family. I know what it's like. They're not functioning in school. They're not functioning in life. You know, you just can't have that for a child. Like, and, you know, they're on about therapists. They're like, I have a list of stuff here. Like, you know, I say myself.
Before you get to that, because this is important, the HSC, after we covered that story, we got in contact with them, and they say, the HSE confirms that there are ongoing active recruitment processes and initiatives in place to fill vacancies arising in children's disability teams. Recruitment to children's disability network teams is receiving priority attention by the HSE locally and nationally due to the workforce challenges in the sector. Now, that might give, for someone who's new to this, a little bit of hope to say, right, okay, something is going to be done. But you're an old dog now in this, Leonard, and you have more information on how all this works, okay? So I think it's important that we get this out in front now, and people actually know the reality of what's going on. So you take it from there, Leonard.
Greg, at that first meeting, it was in May, a few parents approached me, would I become a parents' advocate? And honestly, Greg, I don't have time for it. You know, just with everything going on, you know yourself.
You're flat out, I know.
But I just felt something had to be done. So I asked the questions at meeting.
Now, who were you meeting with, sorry?
We met with members of the HSE.
Okay.
You know, they brought these parents together. It's a great idea, bring the parents together, because strength in numbers not there. And so we met, and I asked the questions. Every parent, I said, how hard are you trying to fill these positions? He said, we're trying everything. You know, I says, are you trying Northern Ireland? You're trying everything. He said, and this line we always hear, people don't want to come to Donegal. We can't get people to come to Donegal. Like, so we, myself and the other parent who's voted in, Sia Kavarma, like, so we went away and did a bit of research on it. So we went away and tried to find these jobs that they can't get anybody to fill. Like. So a simple thing first, we went on Google, we tapped in speech therapy positions, Donegal, HSE. Mm-hmm. Nothing comes up. Went on the HSE website, tapped in speech therapy, you scroll down to Donegal, nothing comes up. So we brought this up at our next meeting with the HSE, and they started looking into it. They came back with the same answer. So lo and behold, Henry, the minister, I think she was up on your show actually in July as well. We were put in a room with the minister. We went through this with the minister. They say she was shocked as an understatement. But as I said at the end of the day, the buck stops with herself. How does she not know this is going on? You know, you've just got websites. You know, it's a simple thing. If I'm looking for staff, you know, I'll do everything I can to get the staff. So, and I kind of put a few things out to her. Like I said, like, there's no psychology in an our area word called Donegal North. This covers an area called like Dunfanaghy, Letterkenny, Fannet. There's 350 families within CDNT there. There's no psychology for that area. There's three positions open, Greg. Like. Mm-hmm. So to me, when you lose one position, you're in bother there. But to lose three staff members and have nobody, that's since last November, like. So now families who are looking now to get their child diagnosed with autism have to go to Belfast. Like, you know, you're sending families to Belfast. You know, there's enough going on in their life, but you're sending them to Belfast to any diagnosis. Like,
yeah.
You know, then, you know, even there now you're sending about Donegal, Donegal East there. No physiotherapy, no OT. Like, you know, that's things around toilet training. That's, you know, sensory feeding, all things that's so important to help a child to develop and function in life, and they're just not there. Like. So when I met with the minister, I say, I went through all this, and she's, why am I not hearing this? And I said, well, I don't know. Like, and she kind of turned around and says, well, we're feeding this up. You know, you have three courses in McGee that do OT, speech therapy and physiotherapy, or sorry, psychology actually in McGee. I asked her, why are we not going in their last year? Hand them contracts, you know, encourage them. They're on our doorstep. We have two courses in the ATU. We've got physiotherapy and OT, and what they're doing there now, in their last year, they pay for a bursary for them to go to Coventry. They get to sign a 3-year contract, which is a great idea. But them contracts aren't for Donegal. You know, so the ATU's hand out bursaries from a Donegal college, and there's no onus on these students to come back and put their time in.
So when they say they're trying everything.
They're not.
when they say they're doing all that they can, they're going as quick as they can. You're saying that's simply not the case. Now, we had a chat off air as it relates to the process in terms of, you know, the people that are qualified here.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to get into these jobs if they can find the adverts for them. What's the complication there?
Well, look, Greg, there's a perfect example. There was a girl who came back from Scotland, from Killybegs. She's a speech therapist, fully qualified. And her mother met somebody within this department and she says, do you know when there'll be any speech therapy jobs come up? She says, oh, we've loads of jobs, speech therapists. She says, well, can you get her an interview now? No, she can't get an interview till next February until the panel's open now. But she says, if she goes in through an agency, we'll hire her in straight away now. They do interviews, Greg, once a year for these panels, right? And at the end of that, then they send them out. So hypothetically, if nobody on that panel that gets the job wants to come to the goal, they wait till next year now. And I put this to the minister. I says, like, so we've got...
So by March, effectively, if they put a panel and no one's picked on a goal, that's it for another 11 months.
But in theory, and I asked the minister, and says, in theory, is this... Because psychology. I says, no, we've none since November. Like, there's been no effort to fill these positions. She says there is, but there hasn't been no effort. Like, and I says, so we'll now go to next February again and there'll be nobody on the panel maybe again that wants to come to Donegal because for whatever reason, and we just leave it for another year. Like. You know, they're not, they're, you know, this is an emergency in these departments. Like, there's no effort put in. I went on Facebook yesterday, there was an ad recruitment for Garage. Like, have you seen an ad anywhere recruiting for speech therapy?
400 jobs within the Guards plus actual recruitment to the Guard. No, I've never seen anything. Like, I've never seen any out of the box active job advertising for either LUH or for these types of services.
But I got a letter yesterday. It was through a question was for Joe McHugh's office actually, mm-hmm. sent to me, and on it they have a bespoke campaign for senior therapy grade positions over the last number of weeks, specifically for Donegal CDNT. And we asked the question again, well, where are these jobs advertised? You know, you can't find these jobs. Like, you know, if you're in Scotland or England or Northern Ireland, you can get 30% more, I think it's 25 or 30% more salary by working in the South in the same positions. Like, you know, we should be inundated with offers. Like, mm-hmm. But they're not actively going out seeking. Like.
No, I'm on Google here, which is the number one. I can't see any pathway into... I mean, you can go into the website and start searching through that, but I don't... There should be a sponsored post at the top with a link straight through.
But Greg, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I keep asking the questions, where are these jobs at? Are they being advertised internally, which is stupid? Like, you know, as I say, that letter I got yesterday, it's just waffle that they tell me that they're doing their best.
So in doing a programme like this, especially when people are very frustrated and upset, and there's nothing worse than when we're worried about our children, far worse than anything we worry about ourselves. I don't want to dash hope, but I don't want to give false hope either. This situation, if the truth be told, unless something very radical happens or unless this is treated as the absolute crisis that it is, all of these positions, and perhaps more, will remain vacant right across Donegal.
In theory, Greg, yeah. And you know what, Greg, this isn't about politics. This is all the politics. And I'm putting it to all the politicians.
Stuff politics.
Like, none of them actually have highlighted this. Like, you know, why did it take two parents who were only involved with something for 2 weeks to figure out that you can't find these jobs? Like, you know, and I've said to all the politicians, you know, why are you just not shouting about this? Why are we not shouting that there's no psychology in this area since November? Like, there's no, you know, and the parents, they keep saying, oh, the parents aren't making enough noise. Like, the parents are tired. Like,
yeah, but you see, the parents, and I've said this before, this is why these things don't get enough attention, because you have hundreds of families individually fighting battles with CAMHS, with the Donegal Disability Network. They're not organised or they can't be organised because they're so busy. They're the campaigners themselves. They're also the caregivers. And because they're individual, they can't make the same noise as us all giving out about our water being costed or having to pay for it. So you go, stuff it. I've had five or six different contacts for different people. I'll focus on something else. And it's a shame. It's a real shame that there's so much talk about the care of children in this country and no one actually cares, it feels sometimes. No one actually cares about this crisis right now that's devastating children and their families. The more worried... Anyway, I'm not going to get into anything else. It just frustrates me
Greg,
so much.
But Greg, it's even now, that lady said it, it's early intervention. The work done today saves down the road. Like, you know, you're trying to give these children the best chance in life of being a part of society and all that. And we're just holding them back. We're not giving the same rights that every other child has, like, you know, right to an education, a right to a good health service, like. And I'm just going to throw another one there too, Greg. See, at the moment now, our speech therapist is also our key worker, like, which is, again, absolute madness. So you have speech therapists who are key workers. And a key worker is somebody who a family liaises with when they have problems, like them ladies are ringing in. So we're now leaving them therapists less time again to do therapies, like. You know, it's just the kind of stuff I brought up to the minister, and like, she's, you know, to
yeah,
me...
But, yeah, but, the, like, I know the minister that you talk of, and I'm not criticising her, but it's like, oh, right, okay, I didn't realise this, thanks for that, this should be brought... But that's not good enough. We need a minister and their department to actually be digging deep into this stuff, to find out these problems themselves and to rectify them. It's not good enough to go, oh, I didn't quite realise that, I'll look into that. We had the same situation with the Minister for Health when a lady fighting cancer herself had to bring an issue, and he's like, oh, I didn't realise that. This is not acceptable.
But Greg, this isn't... That's me as a minister, if I was the minister today, I'd be embarrassed to find out that this is going on.
Well, my daughter, says this listener, just headed to college in 2 weeks' time, wanted to do speech and language there, but thank God I got her to change her mind, which is sad. But the reason, my best friend's daughter graduated with speech and language a few years ago, no jobs, had to leave the country. I don't know what's going on. Well, where would she have found the jobs, or he who found the jobs?
You know, that's, again, Greg, is back to, and you know, it is a scandal. To me, this is an absolute scandal. Like, you know, and it probably is countrywide. Like, you know, and there's a crisis in Monaghan, there's a crisis in Cork, I think it is. Like, you know, same thing, no therapies. Like.
And do you know there's another group of individuals in here as well as granny and granddads? Because it breaks their heart that their grandchildren can't get the services, but they're also, it breaks their heart that their children are having to go through this as well. So it's almost a double whammy for them. I have a grandson with a rare genetic disorder who's non-verbal and has been offered no services whatsoever. Who do we go to? People suggest meetings, protests, parents and carers of special needs don't have time for that. I'm at a loss. I don't know how my daughter, who works full-time, does it all. I worry for when I pass away, as I'm elderly. I know she'll be on her own with this. She has to do it all. I can't really see us going anywhere with this. I'm forever disappointed with CAMHS. A special thank you to Malin, a special needs school, and Spree August Sport. But there's a person helpless, fearing their own death for the pressure it would leave their daughter in. Like, I mean, how can we live, how can people be expected to live their lives like that, Leonard?
But like, Greg, there's a lot of families out there not living. Like, I heard a lady on one day on the TV, and she was saying that the only thing she wished for was her son would die before, so she knew he'd be safe. Like.
I've heard that.
And that's before, so yeah. Sad. Like, that's... You know,
I've heard that said to us. I've spoke to people up here that feel the same.
And there's just no way. And you know, a lot of you just can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, there's no. You're just fighting, and you're tired, and you just want the best for your child. Like.
Caller says his son is special needs and cannot get a physio appointment. He can't walk and needs the help. They were advised by the school that they cannot get anyone to fill the position because the money's so bad. Another caller, a five-year-old child with autism who hasn't had a physio appointment in months from when he was diagnosed, when he had about three different people he saw. It's a disgrace, they say. My son has dyspraxia and development language disorder. Experienced staff are needed to help my son, not just any speech therapist, as it's a complex case. And that's another layer
That's what's actually been said now. The parent now has become the therapist. Like. You know, so with everything else...
we heard from Michelle doing webinars.
Yeah.
But also working and also looking after other children and...
And trying to live a bit of life too, like, you know, have some kind of normality in their life. Like.
Is there a solution? What do you think? Well, firstly, advertise the jobs where they can be seen. Headhunt people. Actively try and recruit.
But Greg, it's not even that. I'm just going to say...
So what else? You tell me, Leonard.
Like, we probably have... With NCDNT, I'm sure there's maybe 11 or 1200 families. Absolutely torture your politicians now. Your councillors, your politicians, because this is embarrassing, Greg. Like, you're this, you know, these are children. It's not, you know, you can't emphasise enough, this is children. Like. This is children who need help, and we're doing absolutely nothing to help them. Like. Not to do anything to help families. Like. To, you know, as I say, that letter yesterday was just waffle. You know, there's somebody typed up, and it doesn't care. We're just numbers, like. You know, to say that we have a special team in there, we're putting special this and special, you know, use nice fancy words. And then you go look for the job. Like, I thought maybe they've sorted it. I went on Google yesterday. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And expedite, what does that even mean? And who's expediting? And because they're faceless,
yeah,
we can't really hold anyone to account. There's no accountability because it's a faceless organisation. Caller says, it makes sense to offer Donegal jobs to Donegal-based students and qualified professionals. It's so stupid that, as you pointed out, that those jobs are going elsewhere. Again, this is the kind of stuff, this should be election issue stuff. Like, but the people get it, Leonard. This is the thing. There was recent surveys, and we get it on this programme. What families want, what the general population want, even those that are struggling, they want proper services, not 500 euro cash drops or 250 euro cash drops. Yes, we need them. We want them. This is apparently an incredibly wealthy country. That we want services. I don't want an extra 5 euro a week. I want other people's children to get these services. That's what, and it's not just me. That's what the majority of people out there want.
You'll walk in some of these families' shoes for a week or so, like Greg, and you just, you wouldn't believe. You're thinking, how are they coping?
We get to hear from someone like you because of your strength. Katie, our last caller, Michelle last week. But how many are finished, that they're dry, they can't even muster the energy to get angry anymore and come on a radio programme or to text it in? They must be in their hundreds across the county.
The amount of families I'd be chatting and say, do you know what, I'm fed up, I'm going to walk away. And you're telling them, don't walk away, because do you know what, your child has a right to the services. Like, you know, people are now saying, oh, we're going to try and go private. That's not the answer. That's a stick and plaster. You know, and I still go back to the fact we're sending children to Belfast now to get diagnosed for autism. You know, to get that actual word that your child is autism, it's tough, like. Mm-hmm. And you're sending people two and a half hours up a road and back down. You know, maybe people from Anishona, you know, far side of the county, like, they just, there's no thought or care, like.
Right, you say people need to, it takes a community, it takes a county to raise a child. We all need to take an interest in this, yeah, and to make this an issue.
And can I say one thing? And there's four CDNTs, and there are families. And we asked all the families, please get involved with your CDNT. We need to make these issues. We need to embarrass people into getting this done. Like, yeah, you know, because like even at that last meeting we had, those 20 families there. And I get it, Greg. They're fed up. They, you know, they don't believe. They think this is just a talking shop. And I said that day, if this is going to be a talking shop, I'm walking away. Like, you know, and that's why I'm making noise, Greg. I'm not going to lie down. And, you know, this is like children and families that are suffering. Like.
And this is the most pressing and urgent part of it, but we could do another hour,
yeah,
on respite and on other facilities. And but we, you know, this is just the most pressing and immediate. Leonard, thanks. Thanks. Now that you're in that position, of course, we will speak again into the, yeah, future. But we just can't let it lie. Like, and as I committed last week that we wouldn't let it lie, and I'm not going to let it lie either. This is a absolute national crisis, a national embarrassment, how we're treating these children and their families.
Yeah, and you know what, Greg, I'm not just saying it. You know, I've been speaking to you for maybe a couple of years on this, and you've always been there to help.
This is the first time you've accepted the invite to come on.
But you know what I mean? Like,
but I know you're very busy with everything else going on and all.
But it's just, you know, we have to keep this highlighted. We just can't let this slip away again and just, you know, it's pushed under the carpet.
And you've, the challenge is there now. The doll's going to be back shortly. The challenge is there now. We have five TDs.
And with local councillors on the HSE, yeah, too. And there's a meeting on the 16th where all the councillors and TDs be invited to with HSE management, which myself and the other parent will be at it.
Yep.
And I want the conscious not to stand up and fight for this life.
We'll touch base at that meeting or after that meeting. Thanks, Leonard.
Thanks, Greg.
That's Leonard Watson there, back with news shortly.